Welcome to Physics and Religion, a series of podcasts exploring the interaction between modern science and traditional religion. I am your host, Dr. Albert Stets. We have been exploring the closely related issues of consciousness and free will. In this and the next lecture, I would like to summarize and finally explain my own thinking on these issues. I hope you've been following along, especially the last few lectures on physicalism and free will. In order to live a moral and spiritual life, it's necessary to be conscious and have free will. Nothing else makes sense. This is certainly true in the Judeo-Christian tradition, and I dare say it is true in all other religions as well. Our investigations, however, have met with obstacles and frustrations at each turn. Some of these can plausibly be attributed to our lack of understanding. Perhaps one day we'll build a computer that thinks like a human being. John Searle's Chinese Room argument may be too simplistic, as Daniel Dennett has pointed out. Perhaps some massively parallel neural architecture will achieve self-awareness and independent thought. Even if we destroy our civilization first, and I'm not altogether optimistic here, it might still be one of those things that might have been done. How does the brain process visual information? We know a little bit about the first stages of this processing. They're wondrously complicated, but there's nothing supernatural about it. Perhaps that is true of everything else the brain does. I see no reason why this should not be true. There are other problems having to do with definition. For example, what is free will? How do you define it? I suggested the most natural approach for a physicist: devise an experimental definition. Alas, I was not successful, even using so far-fetched a device as a time machine. I then suggested three definitions that philosophers have considered. They all seemed objectionable in one way or another. I would like to add my own definition, which is simple, clear-cut, and easy to discuss. Let's say that I have free will to the extent that I can decide to do something and then do it. I realize that my decision might be influenced by drug addiction, armed robbers, irate mothers-in-law, state and federal laws and regulations, and so forth. No matter. Suppose I am handcuffed, gagged, and tied to a chair. Now I really have free will. I realize that I am not strong enough to break my bonds, so I decide that it would be pointless to try. Recall Dr. Libet's experiments in which an action potential appeared in the subject's electroencephalograph a few hundred milliseconds before the subject decided to perform some typical task. Again, according to my definition, this in no way reflects on free will. The key word here is decide. The subject decides to move his or her finger. Dr. Libet's experiments only show that there is a subconscious aspect to decision-making. I presume this is true in general. Well then, how might one not have free will? Kenneth Parks, the sleepwalking murderer, did not decide to murder his in-laws. He couldn't. He was asleep. He didn't have free will. There is a bizarre neurological affliction called coprolalia, a form of Tourette's syndrome, in which the sufferer yells obscene and vulgar epithets at random intervals. People don't decide to do this. To that extent, they have no free will. Could free will be negated in some way by some form of predestination? Einstein's block time universe is a particularly clear-cut and yet confusing example. Suppose I make some decision, let's call it D. According to Einstein, D exists in the block time universe. Note that it is logically contradictory to say that it has always existed, since always carries with it a sense of temporality. It is equally contradictory to say that D happens now, because now is also temporal. Finally, it is wrong to say predestined, because pre implies time. We arrive at the paradoxical position that D is predestined in a world where predestination is logically impossible. Let's attack this problem from another angle. Suppose we devise some experiment to test whether block time is the correct description of reality. Whatever test we devise, and whatever the results of this test are, they are present in block time. So it's impossible to get a wrong answer. Any theory that cannot, under any circumstances, be proved wrong should, for that very reason, not be taken seriously. Finally, could free will be compromised by some sort of physical determinism? As I explained in the previous podcast, in connection with chaos, causal change dissipate. To get an idea how quickly they dissipate, consider the following thought experiment. 15 billiard balls are placed on an idealized pool table. In this table, there are no pockets, and everything happens without energy loss due to friction. So the balls are struck with a cue ball, and they continue to bounce around the table. The collision of two balls on a two-dimensional surface is the simplest sort of deterministic interaction. Nevertheless, it has been estimated that in order to calculate the trajectories of the balls for more than a few minutes, it would be necessary to take into account the gravitational attraction of each electron on the other edge of the galaxy. Needless to say, a computer that could do such a calculation would have a larger gravitational effect than a single electron. This leaves open the possibility that our decisions could be influenced in a deterministic fashion by events immediately preceding the decision. But then, how could that not be true? My simple definition captures the essence of what I think of as free will. If you are willing to buy into it, the question whether or not you have free will is a meaningless question, and you should probably be thinking about something else. Consciousness presents the second great problem of definition. The question is not so much whether we have it or not. I presume that we have consciousness, although not everyone agrees. The question is what it is that we have. René Descartes established the intellectual landscape by postulating dualism. He claimed that there were two substances, as he called them. Today we might say that there are two realms or two distinct ways in which things might exist, although philosophers are still struggling with this. He called them body and mind. Body refers to everything physical, but particularly the brain with all its neurons, synapses, glial cells, etc. Mind refers to another kind of reality. This is the realm of the soul, the realm of thinking and praying. It is the same realm as God and the heavenly powers. There is nothing physical about mind, and it has no location in space. This makes good intuitive sense until you start to think about how something purely non-physical is going to interact with something completely physical. Then you have to allow for philosophical zombies and ghosts, and suddenly dualism seems like a bad idea. The natural alternative is monism, the doctrine that there is only one, for lack of a better word, substance, whether it be mental or physical. We looked at the idea that everything is mental in connection with free will. Didn't seem like a promising starting point for any sort of philosophical investigation. We also considered physicalism, which seemed objectionable for several reasons. There are two other alternatives, or classes of alternatives, let's say, panpsychism and emergentism. I will consider these two in turn in my next lecture.